Thanks for listening. Join us for A Swamp Radio Christmas, Sunday, December 21st at 3 p.m. at the Florida Theater, or Tuesday, December 23rd at 7:30 p.m. in Lewis Auditorium on the Flagler College campus. For tickets and information, go to swampradiojax.com. Dive on in, y'all. The water's fine. I'm going ghosting. It's a Friday night in November 1978, and I'm holed up in the kids' bathroom in our house in Arlington, getting ready for a dance at the middle school. I'm rocking some thick Levi cords, a graphic tee, and my puka shells. A must-have. My sister is beating on the bathroom door, but I don't care. I've just finished blow-drying my hair, hoping my flyback bangs will sit over the large zit, which has swelled up on Thursday night, somewhere between Starsky and Hutch and Charlie's Angels. My neighbor Becky told me to put a dab of toothpaste on it overnight to dry it out. It has worked kind of, but when my brow starts to sweat, I can smell Aquafresh. Later, when I'm fast dancing with my friends, and I only fast danced with my friends at the middle school dance, remnants of the toothpaste will commingle with my Jovan musk to create something very special.
I'm going ghosting.
It's November 1982, and my brother is home from FSU for the weekend. He's brought something called a Walkman. He says I can use it for 1 hour. I pull a cassette down from my shelf, Vivaldi's Four Seasons, and pop it in this mini boombox, and I take a walk around the neighborhood. It's like having a soundtrack for my life.
I'm going ghosting.
It's fall of 1999, and I come home from work at the hospital to my little house in Riverside, and a neighbor asks, "Is your dog kind of medium-sized with golden hair?" And I nod yes, and from the corner of my eye, a crater-like hole is in the window of the screen in the front room. Well, he's running up and down Stockton Street.
I'm going ghosting.
These little flashes and moments of just picking up the paper or stirring my coffee or finding a shell on the beach, it trips something in my mind. My friend Ann Hyman used to call this ghosting. She even wrote a chapter about it in her memoir. It started out something like this.
Ghosting has nothing to do with chasing spirits of the dead. Ghosting is the process of looking for ourselves in all the places we used to be. It's about the way we were and how we got to be the way we are.
I like that part a lot, how we got to be the way we are.
There's a landscape of the past in our minds that we can explore, fine-tune, interpret, and reinterpret. It is a landscape of images, people, voices, places to reclaim from memory, to spin and weave into the pattern of the present.
Good evening, friends, and welcome to the premiere of Swamp Radio Jax. Every time I think about this, I think about having a potluck dinner in someone's backyard in crisp fall air. Everybody's in a good mood. Everybody's bought their favorite dish, mac and cheese, heavy on the cheese, some barbecue, and some slaw. You gotta have slaw. Sweet slaw. No sweet.
Lots of mayonnaise.
I asked my friends to come over to Mocha tonight, and we're gonna serve you a little bit of everything. And if you don't like something you taste, just scrape it off your plate or give it to the dog. Because something new's gonna come out a minute or two later. I'm going ghosting, y'all come too.
You've tuned your podcast dial to Swamp Radio, a homegrown, homemade mixture of homespun music and phraseology from the greater North Florida region, also known as the 904, roger that. Tonight on the show, we'll have a sampling of heavy hors d'oeuvres from food writer Belinda Hewlin, a trip back in time with Wayne Wood, a nod at the natural world with Dave English, and we're going to get down in the swamp grass with artist Jim Draper. Oh, and the usual suspects. Eva, Maya, Simone, Kevin, Tony, a.k.a. the retread players, and yours truly, Andy Nance. But first, let me introduce the band, Dan Hunting on guitar. Lawrence Buckner on bass. Sam Rodriguez drums. And on vocals, the lovely Lauren Vincham. And musical director Richie Campbell.
I should mention that Richard is imported from Long Island. Here is my dear friend and a superb poet and in the driver's seat half the time, Miss Tiffany Melanson.
Hey, y'all. How are you doing tonight? All right, so all that talk about food and mac and cheese has got me a little hungry. So we're going to go ahead and skip on to the eats. Speak to our first guest, food writer, Miss Belinda Hewlin. Welcome, Belinda. So let's talk about your book. You have a food memoir, also cookbook, that has a lot of information about your relationship with your mom. Did you have any trouble getting her to give you the exact measurements for those recipes?
Well, when I told my mother that I was writing Room Memories, I got her to write down a few things. But usually what would happen is I'd say, tell me about this dish. And instead of writing it down, she'd start making it. So I'd have to run in the kitchen with a measuring cup and stick it under her hand before she put it in the pot. And so there was a lot of finessing going on. And of course, like most moms, my mother's recipe instructions left a lot to be desired. My very favorite was, put it all in the pot and cook until done.
And things like just a dash or a pinch.
Oh, yes, exactly. I tell people when they write their family cookbooks, and I encourage everyone to write their family cookbook, I tell them that they need to have a page that has definitions. What Mama said, what Mama meant.
All right, so you've been in Jacksonville for a while, and I know over the 20 years that you've been writing about food, things have changed a lot in our town. So what's changed the most about the dining experience here in Jacksonville?
Oh, my gosh. 22 years ago when I got here, there were two fine dining restaurants and no place where you could buy a good loaf of bread. We had really good barbecue and really good fried seafood, and we still do, of course. But now it's just amazing. I mean, we have a lot of high-end places. We have a lot of creative and awarded, you know, chefs who have won awards and are recognized outside of our area. But the most exciting thing is that we've got all these little ethnic restaurants and bistros in every neighborhood in town. It's a great time to want to eat in Jacksonville.
I agree. I mean, 20 years ago, we certainly didn't have Ethiopian restaurants. It's amazing what's happened.
I can take a bike ride out of my front door in Atlantic Beach and get Vietnamese pho. I can go to a little Mediterranean bistro. I can get seafood, just anything you want.
Well, I know you're a traveler. You come and go a lot. So when you're away from our region, when you're outside of Jacksonville, what's something that you crave that when you get there, they just can't get it right? And you wish you could have it the way you have it here.
Well, there are many things to crave, but the big one, cheese grits.
Mm. Yeah.
When you leave the South, they just don't get the importance of the heavy cream and butter.
Yeah.
And that's also a problem with mashed potatoes anywhere else. Yeah. You know, if you're going to put skim milk and diet margarine on it, I'm not feeling the love.
Yeah. Agreed, agreed. And their version of cheese is not our version of cheese. All right. Belinda, thank you so much for your time.
I'm going ghosting.
It's August 1995. I'm sitting in Famous Amos with my parents, having just moved to Jacksonville from Atlanta to escape the Olympics. I've spent the last 8 hours listening to Michael Jackson's You Are Not Alone, the theme song from the movie Free Willy, on a loop. My eyes puffy and raccoon-like with the injustice of leaving my friends and what they did to that poor whale. I receive my salad with French dressing, which is just icing on the cake because I ordered ranch. I've just about decided to hurl myself off one of the 6 million bridges this city seems to have when the friendly waitress coos, "Oh, I'm sorry, sweetheart. I thought you said French." I can't help but laugh.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Swamp Radio, a homegrown, homespun mix of music and phraseology from the North Florida area. Dive on in, y'all. The water's fine.
This summer, we had a preview of Swamp Radio to see how it would take, and we were blessed to have Wayne Wood on the show. I asked him to come on and talk about the Great Fire, and I have to say the audience was on the edge of their seats by the time he finished the story, so I thought it just makes sense, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I called him and said, "Wayne, would you come do the fall episode?" And he was more than happy to, except I'm not going to bother pretending to interview him. I'm just going to get out of the way and let him talk. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Wayne Wood.
So some of you may know, long before there was a Disney World, a Sea World, or a Universal Studio, Florida had its first amusement park right here in Jacksonville. Indeed, it was a theme park, and the theme was, well, ostriches. Definitely not natives of Florida. Ostriches are 400-pound, 7 to 10-foot birds, and these ungainly creatures are native of Africa, but they came to our shores from California, where the first ostrich farm was established in Pasadena in 1885. Now, those West Coast birds were very prolific, and so their owner sought another farm on which to display his surplus beasts. Well, he figured that Jacksonville was just quirky enough a place to house these giant birds, so he bought 20 acres out on Talleyrand Avenue, not too far from where Everbank Stadium is today. And the first trainload of ostriches arrived on a midnight train November 7th, 1898. 58 cantankerous birds were herded to their new environs on the banks of the St. Johns River. What ensued was dubbed the Florida Ostrich Farm. Not only were the locals agog with the spectacle of these giant feathered curiosities, but tourists flocked from miles around to see this amazing collection of freaky fowl. The ostrich farm was conveniently located at the end of the streetcar line, which brought folks to town on mule-drawn trolleys. Now, more than just a gaggle of exotic birds, the ostrich farm featured ostrich races, in which birds were harnessed up to buggies and pulled human riders at great speed around the oval track. Wagers were placed. Cheers and huzzas rang up from the enraptured crowds. It was a spectacle indeed. The ostrich farm eventually housed over 200 of these giant birds. The star of the show was Oliver W., who was the farm's featured racing ostrich. Now, soon the park began headlining the top entertainment of the day, There were bands and acrobats and wild animals and high wire artists, musical comedy, parachutists jumping from hot air balloons. Even sharpshooter Annie Oakley was a popular attraction, and Buffalo Bill came there many times. There were lions and tigers and curious reptiles. One young couple got married in the lion's den. And Marcus, the famous wrestling lion, escaped one day and frolicked with wild abandon among the 1,500 thrilled spectators who ran for their lives. And the famous daredevil aviator Charles Hamilton, known as the Man-Bird, horrified the crowd when he crashed his biplane into a pole. But luckily, he survived to give an interview to the Times Union in which he promised to have the plane rebuilt and flying by the following day. Now, in 1907, a rival amusement park was established on the south bank of the river in South Jacksonville, which then was a separate city, near where the Museum of Science and History is today. It was Dixieland Park, the zenith of Jacksonville's propensity for gratification, a Shangri-La for pleasure seekers. The Moorish-designed theme park had a roller coaster, a merry-go-round with 56 animals, and other varied attractions, including a skating rink, a dance hall, restaurants, and Captain Sorgo's great deep-sea divers who swam underwater with breathing tubes while the patrons gaped. For a single nickel, merrymakers could slide 160 feet down the Dixie Dewdrop, a bamboo slide. Or a dime would buy patrons a scare at the House of Mystery. The park was lit by thousands of electric lights, which made Dixieland even more magical at night than it was in the daytime. There was fierce competition between these two amusement parks, so when Dixieland featured an Easter egg hunt, the ostrich farm responded by staging an ostrich egg hunt. Although originally well attended, the novelty of Dixieland Park soon wore off, particularly after major fires destroyed many of the rides in 1909. It eventually closed. But no less exotic was what followed, the Florida Alligator Farm, which was built on the old Dixieland site and where hundreds of ancient creatures amused visitors by doing nothing. The Florida Alligator Farm in Jacksonville was advertised as the world's largest, with a breeding stock of up to 150 years old. Now, around 1920, the Florida Ostrich Farm moved in with the Alligator Park, if you can imagine that combination. And then in 1937, two businessmen, Drysdale and Usina, bought the entire collection of beasts and moved them to St. Augustine, where the Alligator Farm still operates today. But the greatest amusement heights were reached by the great wooden roller coaster at Jacksonville Beach, a rickety, towering, twisting edifice of thrills. At 85 feet tall and speeds of up to 70 miles per hour, it was the largest roller coaster in Florida when it opened in 1929. And my grandmother would never let me ride on the roller coaster because in 1950, it closed because two people died. The first to die was a sailor who stood up right beside the sign that said, "Do not stand up." The second was a coaster employee who rushed across the tracks to pick up the dropped purse of a flirting female rider, forgetting that a second car was in operation that day. So nowadays, Jacksonville has no amusement park. And with all this fuss I hear about downtown redevelopment, maybe we should talk to Jaguars owner Shad Khan about buying the empty 40-acre shipyard property and putting in a train load of ostriches. And maybe a roller coaster and some swamp gators. Now, wouldn't that be amusing? Thank you.
Sisters, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sisters, let's go down, down to the to pray.
Jim Draper has been holding up a light to the beauty which is exclusive to North Florida. His recent show at the Kummer Museum, A Feast of Flowers, celebrated the 500th anniversary of the first European engagement with Florida, the first named area in what is now the United States.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Draper.
Thank you.
So, Jim, we all know you as a stunning visual artist, but in the past year, I have noticed all these snapshots creeping up on Facebook of the swamp.
Yeah, one thing about visual art, flat art, paintings and photography, that what we see normally in museums and galleries, there have been studies that say that people only engage for 3 seconds with each image. So my idea is, I mean, this place I love, all this wet, wonderful state of Florida, I really want to say something about and communicate what I see. I'm finding that if I do a video or snapshots and video, that I can actually engage through the video process, I can engage somebody for 30 seconds. And so I can actually say a lot more through using more video and photography. So
you're kind of hip.
I am hip.
I went over and interviewed him at a studio, and he was showing me all this stuff, and I was like, how old are you? Then he's like, oh, and there's this band you should hear. And I was like, not too old for that band.
I'm not.
You showed me some pictures when I was over at your studio of a trip you took recently to a very cool place, and you brought a photographer along who I think had never been to something like that.
Yeah, I've wanted to expand my horizons with technology, and so instead of buying all the stuff and not knowing how to do it, I don't have enough time to learn, so I've started engaging a kind of a crew of some young photographers. So we went to a place called the Chasahowitzka and tried to find. I researched online, and they kept talking about this place called The Crack. So I wanted to see The Crack, which who wouldn't? And so we couldn't find anybody to tell us where The Crack was. So finally we found somebody that said, oh, you go to the end of the creek, and then you tow your boats in to the end of the creek, which we did, drug our boats through several hundred yards of sand, and it opened up to this turquoise crack in the middle of nowhere, the spring that was just absolutely amazing, that nobody wants to know, let anybody know where it is, and I don't blame them. So don't tell those people.
Your secret is safe with us. Yeah. And did you actually take some pictures of the crack?
Yeah, underwater, yeah. I've got some, we took pictures on top of the water and underwater. I've got video of me swimming through the water with the underwater camera. So it's really, really cool stuff.
You had given me that passage from Hyacinth Thrift by Marjorie Kinnon Rawlings, which I was not familiar with, and it speaks to something about getting lost in nature.
I do that. I wasn't necessarily always an outdoorsy person, but as I get a little bit older, I find that this incredible wealth of outdoors is much more revealing about our place in the universe than anything else you can learn. I'm become more fascinated more and more by that idea. I think you find a lot more out about the workings of the world by observing nature than you do certainly by listening to other TV stations or other radio stations.
And do you feel like a visitor there, or you've been going there so much, are you starting to feel more at one with that environment?
I feel more like probably more like a visitor, because I think our species is a visitor more often than not. I think we want to think that we're better than we are, but we really are just another species in the whole gamut of things. And I just got back from the Everglades, and the dolphin there just treat you as they just take you through and treat you as a guest, because it is their world there. It's certainly not ours.
You said something interesting in your studio about the kind of words that come to mind when you come upon these vistas in the swamp, and they kind of take your breath away.
Yeah, they're completely awe-inspiring, and you reach these places, and the world opens up. There's nobody around, and then all of a sudden you're just completely overwhelmed by more than the scenic beauty. It's the sense of place. It's the entire this sense of place that completely. You have this. A lot of us who experience these things, we have this kind of existential sigh that we all do at the same time. When you take a deep, and everybody knows what it is. It's that thing when you've reached that point.
All right. Well, Jim, I consider you a city in North Florida treasure. Thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Spending this time with us.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Swamp Radio, a homegrown, homespun mix of music and phraseology from the North Florida area. Dive on in, y'all. The water's fine.
I'm going ghosting. I have a photograph that looks like a mistake, but it's actually one of my favorites. It was December 1989, and my mother walked out the front door of the house and a few minutes later came back limping. She had gone out to take a picture of our house covered in snow and slipped on the ice just as she was snapping it. The photograph just shows a swirly bit of trees against a gray sky, but it will always remind me of Jacksonville's one and only white Christmas.
Ladies and gentlemen, our special musical guest, Mr. Matt Collins.
You know that feeling in your gut when you're in love, and that voice inside your head saying, boy, what you think you know? And 22 just feels so young, and I got things to get done. I might be wrong, but you're all my mind's stuck on. It takes a little crazy to feel like this. It took a little crazy to steal that first kiss. And if it makes me a little crazy to love you like I do, then I guess I'm just a little crazy for you. My mom and dad got married way too young, but it was fun. We came along, my brother Bo moved to Georgia on their own, where I was born, a crazy boy, saving every nickel, every dime. No perfect plan, a perfect time, just some faith in love and God above, and honey, that's all they needed. It takes a little crazy to feel like this. It took a little crazy to steal that first kiss. And if it makes me a little crazy to love you like I do, then I guess just a little crazy for you. And at the end of the day, me and you can't find a way. Put aside our fears and jump right in. Start a life and make your home. Have crazy kids of our own. Just some faith in love and God above, honey. That's all we need. It takes a little crazy to feel like this. It took a little crazy to steal that first kiss. And if it makes me a little crazy to say I do, then I wanna get a little crazy, just a little crazy. And isn't it crazy we feel like this? still get crazy every time we kiss. And if it makes me a little crazy to love you like I do, then I guess I'm just a little crazy, still a little crazy. I'll always be crazy for you.
Thank Matt again. Thank you so much for that. And we'll look forward to hearing from you again later on in the show.
Sure thing.
All right. Okay, now we get to my favorite part of the show, a little segment we call Fitting Words, where we talk to a North Florida poet of distinction. And so I want to welcome Mr. Brandon King.
Days of Peace. A fifth grade field trip directed my path into a museum where a brain set in a jar of liquid, the color of a frog's underbelly, neither floating or sinking. I gravitated forward, face to glass slipping inside, where left brain set in distinguished silence while right brain painted figures in the liquid. Who were you? Was answered with a trip to distant dimensions where we bounced on the back of a black Mustang, guided a robber through a crowd of lawful bullets, watched the birth of a baby silverback deep in the mountains of Rwanda, then showed a nervous boy how to hold hands with his future lover. Hurry along, children, sent me back into my body, eager to round the next corner.
Brandon, that was beautiful.
Thank you.
Of course, I'm partial to your work. Brandon used to be my student. I want to talk to you a little bit about the inspiration behind that piece. What were you thinking? What memories were you sort of connecting to that made that come about?
Well, I feel like a lot of the things that we do happen before we even realize that they're happening.
Yeah.
And so with this piece, I kind of wanted to take a moment and step back and just think about things like imagination, you know? That awesome moment when you're a kid where nothing really matters that much but what's happening right then. And somehow we forget it.
Yeah, we do. But you just made us remember a little bit of that, so thank you. Well, I know you're going to share another piece with us, so let's hear it.
Dilemma. With the precision of fall's summer-ending scythe, her father placed a rose behind her ear, bright allusion to motion's antagonist. So she steps like a dove perched on electric highways as we travel through the sweetly shadowed garden. Alone, the thorns only tickle her flesh. Touch and I can watch them turn to fangs. Incapable of licking the wild's foreshadowed wounds, I linger, slight trace of lemon in my veins. Though the sun has bathed her grass more than passions of my past, it has never felt the scorch of the sun or the rebirth of rain. In the silence, the wind blows, lifts locks from her Eden fruit cheeks. She looks at me, eyes full of callous masking color, till I deflate in her arms. The garden ripens around us, but we distance ourselves from the flowers while her father still rests in her ear. Thank you.
Thanks for that. You can sample more of Brandon's work on our Facebook page. Thanks a lot.
Let me get that for you, sweetheart.
I resist the urge to correct the tire store owner. Actually, I'm a huge jerk. Instead, I just smile, walk through the open door, and thank him. Sweetheart, maybe he just thought I was a kid.
Now, what's a pretty little redhead like you doing in a place like this?
I try to remain calm and dignified, but I can't help but notice how in the first 30 seconds of interaction, this man has listed the qualities he expects me to have just simply by virtue of being a woman. I'm sweet, pretty, and little. Good old Southern chivalry at its finest. In accordance with the rules of chivalry, a man must always treat a lady like the delicate flower she is. In decades past, this might have looked like the covering of an unsightly mud puddle or abstinence from profanity in a lady's company. But in a more contemporary context, a Southern woman might expect to have her car door opened or her wedge salad dressing on the side paid for. This may seem like a far cry from the knight in shining armor, but the ideas behind these gestures is the same. A man must defend the weak, help the helpless.
Let me get that for you, sweetheart.
As sweet, pretty little women, we fit the helpless bill pretty nicely. Now, as a Southern woman myself, I'm a little ashamed to say I've grown up taking some of these practices for granted. I mean, it wasn't until I started traveling to other parts of the country that I realized, oh, that's not really a thing anywhere else. In San Francisco, you're more likely to find a middle-aged man in point shoes than have someone offer you his coat. And don't expect a tip of the hat in New York, as you'll probably just receive an eye roll or a scathing look for being an obvious tourist and walking like a baby giraffe on icy sidewalks. Now, you might say that this points to a general lack of courtesy, and something can definitely be said about Southern hospitality, but at least this way is gender neutral. Now, as I've gotten old enough to understand the underlying and often unintentional meaning behind the chivalrous acts, I've become a little disturbed by them. I mean, maybe I'm a little lacking in upper body strength, but I think I handled the other 10 doors I opened today just fine, thank you very much. So screams the rational girl power part of my brain that exists outside of social norms and gender roles resulting from centuries of inequality. But then there's the rest of me. That other part that was raised in the South and is accustomed to open doors and offered up seats and, yes, even the occasional picked up tab. The part that says, what are you made of money? Just accept the free whiskey and whatever and call it a win. Now, it's possible this makes me a total hypocrite. I mean, the truth is I don't exist outside society. So I just have to keep reminding myself. Letting the popular boy Brad Hildreth carry your books in middle school is basically what has historically prevented women from voting or earning a fair wage. Before you know it, it's, but honey, you're just so good at mopping the floor and popping out babies. Let me handle all the annoying life-altering decisions. It's a slippery slope. So here it is, the shameful truth. If you buy me a drink, I'll probably take it. And if you open my door, I'm sure I'll walk through it. But just please, please don't call me sweetheart. In return, I promise not to get the vapors and swoon.
Here's a short scene from a play of mine called Bay at the Moon. It's all about things passing you by.
That's an awful nice suit you're wearing, Lamar.
I bought me this suit for my nephew's wedding. I knowed it had to be mine the minute I saw it. Then I decided not to go to the wedding because I didn't like the gal he was fixing to marry.
Who was she?
My ex-wife. You've probably seen her riding a broom around town on Saturday nights.
Lamar.
Then I remember what my daddy used to say. Looking well is the best revenge. And I got to putting on this suit. I just had to go.
Living well. I believe the term is living well.
Excuse me. Maybe that's what your daddy said, but mine said looking well.
He doesn't have a daddy. He's an orphan.
Ava! Well, I bet you cut a handsome figure at the ceremony.
I suppose I did. don't remember too much of it because I was pretty far gone by the time I got to the chapel. Shots of Cuervo, don't you know?
Oh, I hear you.
I was the only fellow the ushers had to help to a seat. My ex's whole family was there just shooting fire at me with their eyes.
And where was this?
Hillgrove Baptist. It's on Road 13. If you blink, you miss it. I'd kind of worked out in my head that when the preacher asked if anyone had any objections, I was going to get up and say, yes, I object. I object to marriage in general, and this one in particular, because they're just going to end up divorced anyway, so why even try? But I spent so much time trying not to fall over, I missed that part. And then it was over. I was a hold of the pew, trying not to pass out, and I saw her two little feet shoot right past me, and I started into crying just like a baby because I'd missed my chance. And this old gal come up to me and hands me some Kleenex saying, I always cry at weddings.
And did they divorce?
Yeah, but it didn't make me feel any better. I thought it would, but it didn't. She's working on hubby number 3 now.
Well, it's still a lovely suit.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Swamp Radio, a homegrown, homespun mix of music and phraseology from the North Florida area. Dive on in, y'all. The water's fine.
I was checking some email the other day, and a childhood friend emailed me to tell me that another one of our childhood friends had passed suddenly in his sleep over the weekend.
His name was Tom. Tom Jackson.
And we did that thing you do where you're in shock, but you're in the middle of your day, so you go, oh, okay. And you go back to your day, but of course when you get home, take your tie off, you take your shoes off, it visits you. And so I reached out to this friend of mine to see what other details he knew, and very few. And the next morning when I woke up, there was an email from this friend of mine. His name is Michael Carroll. He grew up in Fort Caroline, and he's a writer in New York now. And he sent me this short email that said, I wrote this about Tom. I don't know if it's Swamp Radio material. What do you think? So I'm just going to let you all decide for me. Tom by Michael Carroll.
I had a friend here. His name was Tom. We were in middle school together, and I loved him. Even as a kid, I couldn't say why. He was my friend. For a while, I thought I'd lost him. But then he moved into my neighborhood, and one morning he showed up at my bus stop, and I said, Tom! He was the friendliest kid you'd ever know. He was sweet. He was kind. When he saw me at the bus stop, he said, hey, man. That's how kids talked then. They said, hey, man. He wore brown cords and a hoodie, and under the hoodie, maybe a black Sabbath tee. This was a different time, but maybe not so different from now. We got to be friends. Tom was talented. He drew comic books. He was the only one I knew who liked comic books, and he wanted to be an artist. When he moved into my neighborhood, I started going over to his house. He had a pool, and he had these younger brothers. Florida was different then. Florida didn't want to be Florida. People were slightly ashamed. Florida was different then. Now I'm known for writing about Florida, but back then, no one wanted to be known for coming from Florida. Florida was just coming into its own. Anyway, Tom, we got to be friends. We'd roam around in the woods behind our development. We'd pretend that we were in medieval England or somewhere in Europe in the Middle Ages, and this was fine. We were in the subtropical groove where we didn't want to be. We wanted to be someplace else. We didn't get why Northern Florida was special. We rode around on our bikes. We rode in the woods, and we imagined that the straggly pines were noble firs in the deep forests of the Central European spread. Tom wanted to be in the Middle Ages. He had this noblesse oblige. He wanted to imagine that he was a knight ready to help out a lady, and he'd ignore the palmettos. He talked about music and movies. He talked about J.R.R. Tolkien, and we entered high school together, and he was still in those clouds. There was something far off about Tom. We went off separately to college, and we lost touch. When I left Florida, I lost a part of myself. I thought I hated home. I didn't hate home. I only hated the part of myself that had lost home, and the part of me that needed to understand what I had had in Florida. I roamed. I actually went all around the world. I missed people, and I missed Florida. I missed the particular special landscape, those palmettos, the scraggly pines and clear autumn skies and cold nights that were rare, that had made Tom and me dream of other places. I missed the pop music we listened to in other people's cars, the pizza places and video rooms. I missed the malls and drives out to the beach. I missed the dunes under the bald moonlight. And I missed the memories themselves. I missed having lost myself with the others who were gone except in my memory, unless I went back, except I could not go back. And then, a little while later, I learned that Tom was gone. In New York, I think of Tom. I think of us trying to pedal our bikes in the soft white flower sand. I think of his smile. I think of summer nights getting late and we're dreaming aloud together of other places when we shouldn't be. We should be here. Here with the sound of the tree frogs as the sky deepens and turns lavender and then deep blue. I think of being alive. I mourn that we're not thinking of being alive now.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Swamp Radio, a homegrown, homespun mix of music and phraseology from the North Florida area. Dive on in, y'all. The water's fine.
I want to do a song I wrote for my little girl. It's about yay high. It's not one of those kind of pretty princessy songs. It's she has that side, but this one is the side that was fun to write about. It's called Pretty Little Wrecking Ball.
Standing 3 feet tall, 2 foot grin, whole lot to handle, and she's back again. She's my heart and soul. It's hard to be angry at something so small when she's drawing stick figures on her bedroom wall, saying, look, Daddy, it's me and you. If I could freeze little moments like these, she's my pretty little wrecking ball coming alive, just enough sweet and a whole lot of wild. She's my heart, that little girl's a daily chick star. Now I'm bracing myself, she's gotta go. Her heart's on fire and everyone knows that, that girl, she'll have it all. She's a pretty little wrecking ball. Now she's 6 feet tall, and on her own, thinking about college, ready to leave home. She's got places to go and dreams of her own. And the suitcase is packed, the posters came down, then she saw a drawing she'd forgotten about. She said, look, Daddy, it's me and you. If I could freeze little moments like these, it would always be just that little girl and me. She's my pretty little wrecking ball coming alive, just enough sweet and a whole lot of wild. She's my heart, that little girl's a daily kickstart. Now I'm bracing myself, cause she's gotta go. Her heart's on fire and everyone knows that that girl, she'll have it all. She's a pretty little wrecking ball. Now she found true love, finally settled down. Got a little bookstore on the corner downtown. Now she's beginning to show a little wrecking ball of her own. And now our family has a new baby girl. When her daddy held her, it changed his whole world. Take the good with the bad, smile when she's sad. Son, I had a little girl like that. She was my pretty little wrecking ball coming alive. Just enough sweet and a whole lot of wild. She's still my heart. That little girl's a daily kickstart. Now I'm smiling to myself to see her full grown. She's a beautiful wife with a loving home. That girl, she's got it all. My baby girl, she's got it all. She's a pretty little wrecking ball. Pretty little wrecking ball.
Thank you.
Matt's CDs are on sale in the lobby right after the show. I'm going ghosting. I keep thinking about my friend Ann Hyman. Ann Hyman was one of those people who taught you to bloom where you're planted. She used to say, Ian, all you ever need for writing material is within a square block of your house. You don't need to run off. I think about that a lot, and I can see Ann. I just wanted to do one more passage from her memoir, Chaos Clear as Glass.
When I moved to Jacksonville in 1959, I lived in a little furnished apartment on an unpretentious street at a down-at-the-hills corner of the Riverside neighborhood. There were three apartments in the building. A real family, mom, dad, kids, lived downstairs. I shared an upstairs apartment with a college chum, and our other neighbor was a rather intriguing bachelor, tall and dark, an older man, 40, who wore a trench coat and told tales of his years in Europe and India, and who had a copy of America as Civilization on his coffee table. I cruised through the old neighborhood recently. I stopped at the old address. I inventoried in my mind the upstairs apartments circa 1959, bleached blonde furniture and driftwood lamps, kidney-shaped ashtrays on wrought iron legs, for crying out loud. Dave Brubeck and Johnny Mathis on the hi-fi. I almost climbed the narrow stairs and knocked on the door and said to whoever opened it, hey, I used to live here. But I couldn't figure out what to say next, and I didn't feel all that comfortable about who might answer the door, so I kept going. I drove past the dark hole-in-the-wall grocery store where we used to buy cigarettes and Orbit beer. An old man sat on an upturned box outside the front door, soaking in some morning sun and sipping coffee. The neighborhood is shabbier, tougher. The streets are mean looking, but when you're ghosting, you're not looking at the present, at how things have changed. You're looking for the past, at things that have remained the same. Down the street from the grocery is a donut shop that is a 50s classic. Heck, classic nothing, it's a masterpiece. Right down to its tin awnings and the neon and the tile floor. The kid who runs the place now says that people come in all the time and try to put the place back together the way they remember it. In their minds, they shove the coolers and counters back to where they remember it. A customer grins, nods, and says he used to go without milk at lunchtime at West Riverside Elementary so he could buy a donut on his way home. On his birthday, he didn't want a cake, he wanted donuts. The kid behind the counter pours another splash of coffee into the man's cup. You probably weren't even born then, the man tells the kid. The kid shrugs. For sure he wasn't born when the mysterious stranger and I were drinking coffee at the counter, smoking Pall Malls and talking and talking and talking, sliding into the future. I cannot breathe. I am still, so still, to feel, to hear, almost to see through the veil between the present and the timeless. The tapestry that holds first the pattern and then the image. I feel that if I am very quiet and listen, I might hear the distant voice of a child playing in the yard just at the edge of a darkening grove, and it'll be my own voice answering the call to come home for supper.
Well, that's all the time we have. Thanks so much for sitting a spell and joining us down by the banks of the swamp.
Hey, Lauren's going to take us out with an oldie but a goodie. Feel free to join in as the spirit moves you.
I'm going to lay down my burden down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. I'm going to lay down my burden down by the riverside.
Hello, this is Ian Mayers. Thanks for listening to our premiere episode of Swamp Radio. Our associate producer was Chris Farrell. Our production manager was Hurley Winkler. Our stage director was Lee Hamby. Our stage manager was Bradley Akers. Carol Butterly handles all things digital, great and small. Our sound engineer was Mr. Don Ringhofer of Stay Tuned Studios. Special thanks to Mary Branson, Kurt Awater, Bob White, Melody Taylor, Dennis Hamilton Jr., and Tanya Krober. Marcel Poldenick and the staff at the Museum of Contemporary Art of Jacksonville. Swamp Radio was made possible by a Spark grant from the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville. Spark culture, spark change. For tickets and information, go to our website, www.swampradiojax.com, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Thanks for listening. Join us for A Swamp Radio Christmas, Sunday, December 21st at the Florida Theater at 3 p.m., For tickets and information, go to swampradiojax.com.